Hi there, and thanks for joining us. Mindfulness and well-being are more than just two buzzwords, and lots of companies are now employing these techniques to help their staff. We've got a panel to debunk the myths that are out there. And are you a parent whose little bundle of joy won't eat anything other than sausages? Well, the good news is there's a Cork business that's targeted directly at you. I'm Jonathan Healy, and this is Red Business.
Red Business, Cork's exclusive business podcast.
Ask any new parent, and one of the big stresses in their lives, apart from the fact that the child won't sleep, is that the child won't eat. Well, my next guest has set up a business to try and help parents in that difficult situation. Caroline O'Connor of solidstart.ie. You're very welcome to Red Business. How are you?
Thank you very much, Jonathan. I'm good, thank you.
You are a dietitian. You worked with the HSE for most of your career.
Yeah, so for about 18 years, I was a community dietitian with the HSE. So kind of seeing everything from babies right through to people at the very end of their life. You know, well people and ill people. But I guess after I became a parent myself back for the first time in 2007, I became particularly interested in the area of infant feeding and, you know, getting children basically off to the best start in life. Because
yeah.
I guess I'd seen the other end of it where people were struggling to make changes, having lived like a lifetime maybe of unhealthy diet.
Kids are the great leveler in life because you think you're very good at something, and in your case you're a qualified dietitian, and then somebody comes along going, I don't care if you're qualified or not, I'm not eating that.
Exactly.
Did you have that experience even with your own child?
You know what, I absolutely did. Like when I had my first son in 2007, I'd already been a dietitian for 7 years, so I thought I knew a lot. I guess I knew a lot of the theory of infant feeding.
Yeah, but he knew better, you see.
Exactly.
That's what it was.
I mean, I think if I knew what I know now, having had 4 children and obviously more expertise in the area of infant feeding, you know, perhaps I'd have done things differently. And again, every baby brings new challenges. My first baby had lots of food allergies, so that was kind of a whole new area that I had to go and, you know, upskill in and research. So again, that kind of started to point me in the direction really of infant feeding and supporting parents through those very real challenges.
Yeah, and as you make a very valid point that the first child, look, nobody has a clue. There are many manuals. None of them are relevant to your child. Your child
exactly.
is individual to him or herself. So what is the advice that you always give to somebody in that scenario where they come and ask you 1,000 questions? Is there one thing they need to do first?
I guess, I mean, there is a lot of emerging evidence around infant feeding. You know, we have more information than we ever had before about, you know, I suppose what effects the initial feeding process have like on your child. So, I mean, there is a lot of definite evidence that's applicable to every child. So it's important for parents to know that and that information is evidence-based. After that, obviously, it's about being baby-led. You know, that you can take the kind of general advice, but you should always follow your baby's lead when it comes to defeating. So it's giving parents the confidence in to be able to do that, you know.
Do you get a lot of "he won't" as the reason as to why something is happening? Whereas it mightn't be that he won't, it's just that you haven't come at it in the right way.
Exactly. And I suppose particularly when it comes to small babies and starting off on solids, you know, it's kind of it's very much like learning how to walk or talk. You know, children kind of learn to eat at their own pace. So really the parents' job kind of during weaning is really to set up a supportive environment and allow your baby to progress through that journey kind of at their own pace. So again, while there are guidelines and kind of milestones that you'd like to meet along the way, and it's up to the parents to kind of guide that, the baby, you know, will also have their own kind of pace. So it's basically kind of, you know, working together to find out what's right for your family.
Now, you walk down the baby aisle of any supermarket and you are completely overcome with colour and flavours and tastes and additives and sugar and all the things that you're supposed to be doing or not supposed to be doing. What is the best thing to do to wean a child? I mean, do you go straight for the baby rice or do you try other textures first?
Yeah, that's a really good question and something that is kind of hotly debated on different Facebook groups and parenting
don't mind them,
forums.
They're all mad.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that was one of the reasons I started Solid Start in the first place, I suppose, to kind of give parents evidence-based advice because, again, you'll find that everybody has an opinion, you know, when it comes to what is the first food that you should give your baby. People say, well, I give rice. That he turned out fine, or you know, I did baby led weaning, or I did spoon feeding. You know, everyone has their own opinion. I mean, really, the best food for your baby is family foods. So there is some evidence to suggest that starting with the vegetables, particularly those that are harder to like green vegetables, is helpful because it helps your baby to learn to like more bitter flavors, and other flavors then will come more easily afterwards. But if parents really want to start with baby rice, then there's no problem with that either, you know. So I think, you know, it very much depends on the family. Some people like to start with pureed food. Some people like to start with baby-led weaning, where the baby goes straight into feeding themselves whole pieces of food. And either of those approaches is absolutely fine.
The best thing we did was you invested in a series of small pots. So what you did is you make one big batch of stew or spaghetti bolognese and you blend it up and you whisk it up and you put it in little pots, put it in the freezer, and lo and behold, you have a week supply of food.
Exactly, because at the start it's really only about taste. Your baby isn't really eating a huge amount of food, so yeah, you certainly don't want to be.
So should they be eating little bits and pieces from your plate as well? Obviously, you know, not the hard to chew stuff, but the softer foods on the plate.
Yeah, like most family foods can be modified for babies, so whether it's, you know, blended a little bit or whether you chop them up into a safe kind of finger food texture, but really when you start your baby on food, you want your baby to eat food that they're going to be eating later on in life. So, you know, there's no point your baby having a very strange concoction of, you know, blueberries with sweet potato, because that's not a meal that they're going to be eating in a year's time.
The big challenge, Caroline, for any parent is, I don't like that. Even though they did like it and they ate it before, but now they don't like it anymore. And as a result, diets become very bland. I mean, is it normal for children's diets to be completely and utterly horrifically bland for a very short period, as they say they don't like anything?
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of it depends on how you start. So the weaning process is really important because that's your kind of golden opportunity to expose your baby to a wide variety of foods. So that's why weaning is essential. But even a baby who gets off to a fantastic start with weaning will often become increasingly fussy as they go towards the toddler years. And
God forbid you'd see a bit of onion. That's in our house.
Yes. I mean,
the onion that they've eaten all their lives is now the enemy.
Yeah, well, I've got a couple of onion phobic children myself. So I know exactly where you're coming from. So yeah, fussy behaviour is very normal. It's a developmental stage that toddlers go through. Some of it's personality. Some children are more anxious around food than others. Some children taste foods in different ways than others. I suppose what matters around managing fussy eating is how parents deal with it. So sometimes, because I guess there's a lot of pressure on parents to make sure that children eat, perhaps we do things that actually aren't very helpful and kind of, you know, perpetuate the fussy behaviour rather than help your child.
So how do you get past that? How do you get them to try broccoli, eat broccoli, like broccoli?
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of different things you can do. So sometimes it's not so much about what you feed, but more how you feed. So how you set up meals throughout the day, you know, kind of having as many family meals as possible, because children learn by watching their parents, and ultimately parents are the best role model for children. It's why parents often say to me, you know, my child will eat everything in creche, but they won't eat anything at home, because children learn by imitation. So yeah, having family meals together if possible, you know, having structure to the day, because kids again thrive on routine, particularly when it comes to feeding. So rather than kind of grazing all day on little snacks, you know, actually having kind of structure to the day with meals and snacks.
Well, I have a 4-year-old at home, and I'm going to revel in the time when she turns 18 and says, oh, I'm not eating carbs. Going, well, for an entire year you ate enough carbs to sustain you for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
For you, as somebody who worked in the HSE for 18 years, how hard was it to transition to being a business person?
I mean, obviously the subject matter is similar, but yes, how I approach it is quite different. I guess I kind of think of myself as kind of an accidental entrepreneur. When I was on maternity leave, I came up with the idea for the weaning classes because I wanted to fill that gap with evidence-based information. So I guess I didn't set out to kind of start a business, but that's, you know, what it has evolved
it
into.
Has become, but I mean, you've got a ready market for it. Are you busy?
Really busy. Yeah, there's a huge demand for it. You know, I've actually been overwhelmed by the demand for both the classes, the baby weaning classes, the fussy eating classes, and I also have offer parents private consultations as well. The demand is huge. Parents are, pardon the pun, hungry for information and the correct information, because there is so much information out there, but unfortunately a lot of it is opinion, a lot of it is offered by people who don't have the appropriate qualifications. Yeah. So people want advice they can trust, you know. I've been lucky to have some, I guess, support business-wise along the way from Rubicon in CIT and from CCAD. So, you know, that's been hugely supportive for me, because obviously the nutrition side is something I'm very comfortable with, very confident about. But yeah,
the business side is completely different. Well,
yeah.
If people want to get in contact with you for their one-on-one consultations or take part in those classes on baby weaning and fussy eating, solidstart.ie is the website address. Caroline O'Connor, it's been an absolute pleasure. Enjoyed the onion. Make sure you put as much onion into that food as possible.
It's all about exposure.
It's all about exposure. Caroline, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Red Business. All that's best about business in Cork.
Now we're going to talk about something a little different on Red Business. It's an area that is growing. People didn't know what it was 10 years ago, but we're all very conscious now of mindfulness. And if your head's not right, how can you expect your business to be? With me are three people who are practicing in this particular area, and we'll talk to them about their own business as well before we move on to the general discussion. So I'm joined by Saskia Kramer from saskia.ie, Aisling Cambridge from, she's self-proclaimed Minister for Happiness, which is a fantastic claim, and Roisin Kenny from mindbodyireland.ie. You're very welcome to Red Business. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, John. Thank you.
It's great to be surrounded by such mindfulness. I'm normally here on my own. let me talk to you first of all, Saskia. Tell me a little bit about your business.
What I do is I work with professionals and business owners who are already successful but time challenged to find the bandwidth to the next step within their business.
So what challenges do you encounter then? People who don't have time is the big problem for everybody.
Well, they are already successful, so there is a lot of stuff coming to them. So often what I see is that people are running behind. They are rather reactive than being proactive. They are running behind the emergencies or the things that need to be done then and there without having the mind space or the rest or the... I would say the peace to see further or to see beyond what needs to be done immediately today.
So in other words, they're dealing with whatever crisis is in front of them without really taking in the bigger picture.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
I can empathise with that. I can understand that straight away. Aisling, I would have thought that we were capped at 15 ministers, but obviously you've appointed yourself to cabinet as Minister for Happiness. Tell me a little bit about what you do.
An unofficial title I'm very happy to have, I must say. I basically got nicked and named that through my own work as a nutritional therapist. I've been practicing for 14 years. So when it came to starting my business, I thought it was a lovely name and it kind of catches people's attention too. The work I do, Jonathan, is wellness workshops. And I go into companies and wellness at work is what I focus on in companies, because it's something that really needs to be focused on nowadays, with people being a little bit more stressed out, again, time poor, trying to juggle work-life balances and so on. And what I bring to these workshops is the elements of the nutritional therapy, which is working on people fueling their bodies efficiently and nourishing their bodies. Also, I come from a fitness background, so I advise on movement and fitness. And finally, then the mindset side of things, which is crucial, as we're discussing today, because we know how to fuel our body efficiently if we're told what to do dietary wise, but we're not really told how to handle our mental diet. And that's what I work on with people.
Okay. And obviously that feeds into every office. You see that everywhere, do you?
Oh, everywhere. Absolutely. Individuals, businesses, couples, everywhere.
And tell me then, what do you do then, Roisin? A little bit about your business.
So I run Mindbody Ireland, and it's a health and wellness business based here in Cork, but I provide services in the Cork, Kerry and Limerick area. And the types of services that we offer are mindfulness meditation trainings and workshops, as well as art psychotherapy, yoga therapy for stress and burnout, and yoga and Pilates. So these are provided in businesses, different types of workplaces, charities, and as well as schools in the Cork area, as I mentioned. Mm.
Now, I would imagine, lads, that this is the kind of thing that had you gone to a business in Ireland 20 years ago and says, how's it going? I'm here to talk about mindfulness. You'd have been shown the door quicker than the fella trying to sell you some dodgy slates. Yet we have embraced it a little bit more, Aisling, have we?
Absolutely. Actually, currently in the United States at the moment, they have wellness chief wellness officers. So something that I think is going to start to trickle into other countries. And it would be great to see it in Ireland, because what you're doing is you're looking after your employees, which is essential. If you want your business to succeed and you want your customers to be happy, then you need to have happy employees.
Does it really come down, Roisin, to the mindset of the boss? If the boss buys into it, then you're more likely to get a call. Whereas if you have a boss who goes, that's a load of old bunkum, then they're not going to pick up the phone.
That's exactly it. I always recommend when I'm consulting that they should introduce mindfulness training at the highest level first, so that they can show to the employees that this is the culture that we are embracing. We're looking after our own mental health at this level, and then they can really have a genuine trickle down of self-care to all staff within the business.
Do people buy into it though? When you start to explain, look, if the boss has bought in, that's fine, but Johnny in stores goes, that's a load of old nonsense, I'm not getting involved. Do you eventually break through to Johnny?
You do, and what I always do is offer tasters and kind of learning lunches where I show them the science. And you might think that meditation is a bit airy-fairy and that's not my cup of tea at all, but if you actually show them the clinical studies and show them the neuroscience behind it, then it's hard to deny, okay, I actually want to give this a go. If that's all it takes, I'm all in. Mm. So I think you can approach it differently for different types of people.
Saskia, education is key in this. And I only found out last week that in the reform of the junior cycle in secondary school, mindfulness and just looking after yourself is now a core part of the curriculum, which I think is fantastic, because it was never discussed in our day how you need to mind your head.
Absolutely. I think it's crucial for us to learn that when it comes to mental health or reducing stress or our mental well-being, I think we cannot start early enough. As the Chinese do, is they take healthcare from the health perspective, so it's preventive. They start from as soon as a child is born, they start preventing and optimizing the mental and physical well-being, instead of what we do here in the Western society, start doing something as soon as we
find a problem.
Yeah, when we are getting symptoms and we are starting to treat the symptoms, instead of being way before that, and to know, okay, when there is a time that I take on someone to help me out, not because I am mentally ill or I am sick or I need a pill to cure a symptom, but to be able to navigate through all the stressors of life in a good way.
I'm taking from your accent, you're not originally from Ireland, are you?
No, I'm not.
Where are you from?
I'm originally from Holland.
I'm from Holland. Okay, so the Dutch did take a little bit of a different approach to the Irish. When you came to Ireland, first of all, were you surprised at the, I suppose, lack of enthusiasm for this kind of thing?
I think I wouldn't say so much the lack of enthusiasm, because I think that there is a true need and a true hunger for something like this. What I see is that there is still people who remain on their little island, so they think that they are dealing with the issues or the stress and the overwhelm or the burnout situations, and they think they are alone. And what I try to do is show them, you're not the only ones in this situation. There are a lot of people, and it's very, very common to be dealing with stress, with overwhelm, with challenges of time, with mindset issues, where you stop being successful And what I see in here in Ireland is that a lot of success is based on the amount of hours we're putting in our work. So if I can say I work 40, 60, 80 hours, that's what measures my success. But if I say I am successful and it gives me satisfaction as well, and I'm working only 20 hours.
Yeah, but maybe they might be 60 unproductive hours and 20 productive
absolutely,
hours.
So absolutely.
You spend most of your time stressing out. Aisling, do you find that when you go into workplaces, that do you often see a little bit of a light going on in someone's head when you're explaining this to them?
100%. A lot of the time is as Saskia said, a lot of the time people just aren't aware what's out there to help them. And, you know, it usually gets to this point, I suppose, our physical and mental health can be an illusion until we actually need to fix it. It's not something we really think about tangibly, because until we lose it, that's when we go, oh, I need to fix my health, whether it's physical or mental. So when you go into companies or you're dealing with individuals, you can see it, because straight away you say something, it makes complete sense to them. Mm. A lot of the time, I think what all of us teach or what all of us practice is things that people already know deep down inside. It resonates with them when you say something.
But they've ignored it.
Yeah, because they haven't been made aware of it a lot of the time. You know, again, in Chinese medicine, the emperor's job was to keep emperor's doctor's job was to keep the emperor well. And we have lost that now. So I think it's time to bring that back in.
Look, the real challenge here, Roisin, in many ways, is that our lives have become so interconnected that we've lost that perspective, that we don't know that we do need to switch off, and that our brains do need to have periods in the day where they're not worrying about literally everything. And I have in my hand here my little smartphone that, you know, is still lighting up every time somebody sends me a message. Is that the biggest challenge we have, this constant connectivity?
I think so. I heard a phrase recently, the age of mass distraction. And I think that sums up the world that we live in currently. So whether it's in a business or in a school, if I'm providing stress management information, the number one thing that I will be encouraging people to think about is, how much time do you switch off? As in, how much time do you give your body's nervous system a chance to move into the calmer state and out of the stressed state?
Yeah, but can I talk about, just as a parent, and I don't know if any of you guys are parents, but that used to be sitting down watching the TV, the nicest thing in the world. And now I feel my hand is turning on my phone and I'm looking at social media. I've almost done it subconsciously, but I can't even enjoy the moment of watching the TV.
You're trying to do two things at once.
Correct. And I'm brutal at doing one thing, never mind two. So how do I reprogram my brain to stop doing that?
You have to be conscious that you're doing it first. So once it's brought to your attention by someone this week, pay attention to how many times your phone is being picked up during a conversation with someone. So then you can start to bring in periods of time, like from 10 o'clock onwards in the evening, I'm not going to have my phone switched off or switched on. So you can make proactive steps in protecting your own mental health. And those small little things make a big difference to your nervous system.
We always have to have one eye, Saskia, on the generation coming behind us and the example that we are setting. They seem to be completely unable to switch off. And I don't know how that is going to manifest itself when they get to college. When I was speaking to a psychotherapist who's working in a university last week, who says that this is the most stressed bunch of people she has ever worked with. Mm. And they're at the start of the journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And I see it very early already. I mean, the fascination of young children for phones or devices, it's just incredible. So I think as a mom of two young children, I'm trying to be really attentive to how I try to educate the children with devices. I mean, it's crucial part of our life. I mean, it wouldn't be realistic to
ignore it.
But I think that especially children, I think when, as parents, we are aware of what our children are trying to say, I know that if I am on my phone, my child will not have the same behavior and will start behaving terribly if I don't give him or her the attention he or she needs. So the fact of being attentive to my own behavior and say, okay, my son or my daughter is asking me something now, I switch, I make the act of switching off my phone
and listening,
putting it aside and be fully aware of what they need at that moment. That gives them a signal, hey, I'm important here. I'm fully seen and heard.
But going back to the 20 years ago and the boss walking in saying you need to talk about mindfulness and everybody laughing. Mm-hmm. If you had to explain to somebody 20 years ago, you were going to have to put down a piece of technology so that you would listen to your own child, mm-hmm. they would have gone, what is going to go wrong
absolutely,
with society?
Absolutely.
That becomes a thing. Look, it's been a fascinating conversation and I'm genuinely open to this because I think it's very important. But if you had to give one bit of advice, what would it be to someone listening right now, be they the employer, the employee, the person who's looking after the kids at home or whatever the case may be? I'll begin with you, Roisin. What's the one most important thing people who are listening right now need to do for their mindfulness today?
I suppose the first thing is notice where you're putting your attention. And once you realise where you're putting in your attention, you can then decide, is this healthy or unhealthy? So you know that you have a choice. So if you're putting your attention onto technology instead of your children or into technology instead of your co-workers, then you can have a choice to put that down, make eye contact with people and listen to them and see how it feels and come back to those human responses.
Aisling, what would it be for you? What's the one most important thing?
100% what Roisin just said, I would agree with, because I think presence is probably the most valuable commodity nowadays and people aren't as present as they could be. If I was to give one piece of advice to anybody, it would be to start meditating. The science is there, the research is there, our peers have proven it over and over again, and it's been around thousands of years for a reason. And it doesn't make you, you know, it's not about being good at meditation, it's about meditating to be better at life, because it does give you the coping skills to be able to perform better on a daily basis.
And Saskia?
I would say I absolutely agree with what has been said before. What I would say is be attentive to take the time in the evening to be grateful in the first place to what you have achieved during the day. And a success without the satisfaction is a tremendous failure, is even the greater failure than not doing anything. So be aware in the evening of acknowledging the things that you have been able to accomplish and to really pay attention to that so that you nourish your soul in being present in what you have done.
Look, there's lots to take. I feel very zen after this conversation. Final question to you. Is it by chance that you're all women? Are there men working in this mindfulness space as well, or is it a female-dominated profession?
Thank God there are, but I would love to see more men in this space working.
Yeah, interesting. Just an aside. Saskia, your website is saskia.ie. How do you spell Saskia, just for people who want to?
saskia.ie.
Aisling, how do people get in contact with the Minister for Happiness? Is there a Ministry for Happiness?
There is the Minister for Happiness. So the website is www.minister4happiness.com.
Okay, very good. And Roisin, how do people get in contact with you?
You can look at my website, mindbodyireland.ie, and you can also read the blog on the website to read a little bit more about mindfulness and workplace wellness.
Look, it's been genuinely an enjoyable conversation and I feel a lot more relaxed after. Now, I'm going to take a moment of zen this evening when I'm sitting at home.
Good.
I'll turn off the phone, turn off the television and just look out the window.
Lovely.
Take in the day. Saskia Kramer, Aisling Cambridge and Roisin Kennedy, thank you all very much for joining us on Red Business.
Thank you.
My thanks to all of my guests. Don't forget there are over 100 episodes of Red Business to download from redextra.ie, along with lots of other great content from Cork's Red FM. Niamh Hennessy produced, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Red Business, Cork's exclusive business podcast.